Welcome to Women Who Move Nations, the public transport podcast, where we interview our industry's top female executives from Australia, New Zealand, and around the world. I'm Michelle Batsis, your host and the Chief Executive Officer of the Public Transport Association, Australia, New Zealand. We're raising the voices of women for everyone who works in public transport and mobility, and particularly for any of our listeners who are early in their transport careers and looking for inspiration. Each of our guests shares her views on the future of public transport and provides insights into their career journeys. Make sure you follow Women Who Move Nations on your favorite podcast platform and rate the show to help more people find us. You can also join our community on LinkedIn by searching Public Transport Association Australia New Zealand. We're also on Twitter at PTAANZ_, or visit us at www.ptaanz.org. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Thanks for joining me again to hear from the Women Who Move Nations. This week, our guest is the Honourable Rita Saffiotti, Minister for Transport and Planning in the Western Australian Government. We're thrilled you could join us, Rita. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Michelle. Thank you for the opportunity to be joining you today.
To start with, can you give us an overview of your role and focus areas and what's happening in public transport in Western Australia?
Sure. So I'm the Minister for Transport and Planning. So it is quite a big portfolio. So not only am I overseeing the planning of the state, but also all modes of transport. So during this time and as part of our agenda, we're delivering a significant amount of infrastructure, public transport infrastructure. It's called MetroNet, and it's a significant and biggest ever investment in public transport. So as part of my job and my role, I'm overseeing the delivery of a number of new projects. So together with our public transport, we're delivering a record amount of road spending. We're also delivering a record amount of cycling infrastructure too in Western Australia. So all modes, we are actually delivering records amount of spending. And of course, coupled with my planning hat, we're really trying to improve the livability and the level of activity across the whole state. So it's a very big agenda and one that we're in the process of delivering.
Excellent. Rita, it's fantastic that you've got such a record agenda in terms of the projects you're putting into place for public transport in particular. And you referred to the MetroNet project, which I'd really like to hear a bit more about from you. It's a project that actually, certainly in Australia, we've heard quite a bit about, and it's pretty impressive to know that there really is a map forward in Western Australia for what kind of rail infrastructure would be delivered. I understand it's going to deliver 72 kilometres of new passenger rail and up to 18 new stations. I'd like to hear more from you about that. In particular, how do you see this project transforming the way people can get around and the quality of life and livability in Perth?
Sure. I mean, like all states and all cities, you know, our cities keep growing outward. So we've got, in a sense, urban sprawl, just like many other cities. What MetroNet is doing is really making sure that we're delivering the infrastructure as those suburbs grow. So for the first time, we're not going to be retrofitting suburbs with rail infrastructure. We're building the rail infrastructure as the suburbs grow. So the MetroNet program includes new rail lines as suburbs grow. It also involves making sure that suburbs that have grown get new infrastructure. So for example, to the north, we're extending a rail line up to Yanchep. In the south, we're extending a rail line down to Byford. In the northeast, we're creating a new rail line from Bayswater up to Ellenbrook. We're also creating a rail line linking the city to the airport. And we're also linking two existing rail lines with our first, in a sense, circle route, connecting the Armidale line to what is known as the Mandurah line. So we're creating new rail lines, as I said, delivering the new stations and the new rail lines as suburbs grow. And in other situations, we're also making sure that, for example, the Northeast Corridor Perth, which is not serviced well by public transport gets a whole new rail line. With it comes up to 18 new stations, and these stations are all modern new stations, and they're being delivered. They're in a progressively being delivered at the moment. We're also building our new set of rail cars here in Western Australia. So as part of Metronet, we've funded 246 new rail cars to replace some of our ageing rail cars and also for the expansion. And so we've got 246 new rail cars that will be built here in near Midland, and that's another part of our project. We're also doing some level crossing removals, and we've just submitted a business case for 6 level crossing removals through Cannington and Victoria Park. We're in the process of removing a level crossing down in Kelmscott. So across all areas, whether it's level crossing removal, new rail lines to new suburbs, retrofitting some rail lines in more sort of inner middle suburbs, or whether it's rail car building, we're basically doing it all at the moment.
Wow, that's really impressive to hear. I mean, I really like the fact that you're thinking about the planning in a different way than perhaps what's happened in the past, right? Where you have new developments or suburbs pop up without the infrastructure there for people to be able to move around. So it's great that that thinking has really shifted in the way that this project's being delivered.
I'll jump in, Michelle, because I think what this also gives us the ability to do, and when we're building our new stations, is actually really create a good city centre. And again, many of the train stations that we've done in the past have been, in a sense, adjacent to or a fair way from what is the city centre. We've got the planning underway to ensure that basically a lot of our new stations become the new hubs of the suburbs, so they don't become just an adjunct to a city centre or something that, you know, is a few kilometres away. It actually forms a new city centre. So as a result, we're really putting a lot of investment into our station design and the planning around those new stations. So we have an integrated station and city planning framework. And that's the most exciting part of Metronet, is actually not only having the infrastructure, but facilitating much smarter urban development.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Oh, it's really inspiring to hear, Rita, because this is, you know, I guess a challenge that we see globally around how cities and how places are planned, and how transport and particular rail should really be at the backbone, at the heart of that. So it's great to hear. My next question, actually, I wanted to talk about Western Australia more broadly, and certainly for our listeners out there who might not be familiar with Western Australia, it's a massive state. I read that it's about 2.5 million square kilometres, which is around 10 times the size of the UK. So, you know, huge territory that you're covering and responsible for transport and planning. So I wanted to ask you, what are the unique challenges, but also the opportunities that that area presents for public transport?
Well, as you noted, the distances are massive, and Western Australia is a very big state. Our population density outside of Perth isn't high, and we don't have a high, you know, we don't really have the significant population centres that potentially other states do. So as a result, it's a significant challenge. And so what we try and do, and what we have tried to do, is support our train services. We have a train service known as Australind that goes down to Bunbury. We've got services out in the Wheat Belt. And of course, we've got the Prospector through to Kalgoorlie. So what we're trying to do is make it as attractive as possible to use our longer train services. We're trying to improve technology, and technology on these train services is a challenge. For example, to Kalgoorlie, we're seeing how we can support Wi-Fi on trains and so forth, because it's nowadays, if people choose train travel, they want to have a level of comfort, and we're trying to really achieve that. We also run a number of coach services as well. And of course, one of the other, so I suppose, maybe unique services is our school bus services, which are done also to help regional students access their local schools. So the logistics are challenging. And when you're always trying to make sure that these services are viable and that you have enough you know, people catching our services, in particular the coach and the rail services. There was a move a while, I think about 5 years ago, even longer, to try and shut down one of the trains, regional train services. That was very much not accepted by the community. So our attempt is always to make sure that we get as many people as possible. And we're doing improvements, for example, to our regional services. We look at the north, it's quite interesting in the role of aviation in WA, and we look at public transport. Increasingly, you see the role of aviation and the need to have affordable and accessible air services in a place like Western Australia, because in a sense, it is the only way to be able to move around without driving for, you know, a number of days. So aviation, I think, in WA plays such an important role, a vital role in allowing people to move around the state too, in particular in our northwest and in our Kimberley. So I think there are significant challenges, but we're doing what we can to support public transport services because it is such a necessary part of how regional WA can access the city, but also how people can head back to their regional towns.
That's so great to hear, Rita. And I think it's really interesting to hear how you're tailoring to meet the needs of those different communities in such disparate locations. I wanted to talk to you now about COVID-19. And obviously, this is a pandemic that's affecting many cities, most cities around the world. And certainly we've seen its impacts on public transport. And from your perspective, particularly about how COVID-19 is changing people's behaviour and the way they move around, and particularly for Perth, Western Australia's capital, do you see or expect a longer term change in customer needs and behaviour as a result of COVID?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Of course, I'll just outline some of the statistics of what's happened in relation to modes of transport. So in Western Australia, noting that we haven't had community spread of COVID-19 now for, I think, 140 days, we now see the roads back to over 100% of pre-COVID activity. So our roads are coming back to normal, our road usage. Public transport's hovering around 75% of pre-COVID usage, which I think is, if not the highest, but one of the highest of all the states. And what we've seen on cycling, and we do have a very good cycling network, which we're improving all the time, we've seen significant jump, between a 20 or 50% jump in the use of many of our cycle paths. So there's no doubt that public transport is in a sense the lag item in all of these, in all this analysis. We've done a lot to try and support people's confidence in public transport. Again, we don't have community spread, but moreover, we've implemented a much more aggressive cleaning regime in our buses and on our rail network. And we've also tried to make people as comfortable as possible on our services. I do think we'll get back to normal. I do think that in relation to the numbers. I just think it will take a while, in particular as more people are still either not working because of losing their job, but other companies having people work from home. So in Western Australia, we're in this sort of weird circumstance where even though we don't have community spread, there have been decisions made by national companies to have more working from home still. And I know, and more companies and people are choosing where they can to work from home. So that's impacted the number of people coming into the city. So that 75%, I think, is reflective too that there are some, and there's a greater proportion of people working from home. I do think as we go back to normal, just like other, I've always said public transport is sort of indicative of other parts of society. You know, there are still people that won't go to a football game, even though a football game might be on. So there are people that continue to choose not to put themselves in these situations, but and they do that across their activities. But I do think that we'll get back to normal. And I do think, although that being said, I still think there'll be continued increased use of cycling, scooters and other sort of mobility devices to also move around. But I do think we're going to get back to normal, but there'll be, like I said, a greater focus also on cleaning our buses and trains and making sure that people maintain their own hygiene as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting to hear, though, that your patronage has come back to about 75% in terms of ridership. Not only is that one of the highest of the Australian states, that's actually up there with the highest in global cities as well. So, you know, there are a few cities in the world that have come back to about 75, 80%. So, you know, that's fantastic to hear that people in Perth have the confidence to be using the network to get around. I wanted to now talk to you about sustainability and green technology, which is a big focus for the UITP network around the world. And certainly I think is a trend that we're seeing come out more strongly in the Australian region. And I know that, you know, with many cities adopting new and green technologies, you know, on their path to transitioning their fleets to zero emissions, Western Australia has made an announcement recently about this, which I think is really exciting. So I understand you've announced a trial of 4 electric buses. Could you share a bit more about that? And why do you think it's important that Western Australia is undertaking these types of trials?
Well, there's a couple of things I'll note. Our expansion of our rail network, which is, I think, one of the best sustainability measures you can do. I think encouraging people into mass transit is the most, I think, productive and effective ways of improving sustainability of transport. That's, you know, run by electricity. So I think our expansion of our metropolitan rail network is very, very important, and I highlight that all the time. The other recent announcement too is that we're implementing a program of putting solar panels on our stations, and I think up to 50 bus stations too, to also make a better sustainability of the infrastructure. When it comes to buses, we have a very modern fleet, but we're also undertaking a trial of electric buses. There's been a lot of discussion about electric buses, and in particular in social media, about what we should or shouldn't be doing. It's been an interesting debate to watch. But what we've done is we've talked to the manufacturer who works with us in supplying our bus network. And with Volvo, we're going to trial their electric bus, hopefully at the end of next year or by early 2022. And in particular, we're going to trial it on one of our, they're called a CAT bus service, which is sort of a shuttle service. And we're going to see how that goes. And we hopefully were able to then bring it across the network. As part of the contract that we have with Volvo, we actually included the ability to go to alternative energy. So we see this, if the trial succeeds, as a next, in a sense, the next thing to be doing is to having electric buses across the network. Of course, charging infrastructure and charging stations are the big sort of upfront cost as well. So we're inserting it for our trial bus service, and it'll be something that will need to be factored in if we expand across the network. But as I always say, in particular when people discuss electric vehicles, private motor vehicles, that I think the biggest improvement we can make to sustainability of our transport system is encouraging as many people as possible onto our buses and our trains.
That's so great to hear, Rita, because at UITP, that's what we're all about, promoting public transport as a sustainable way to move around our cities. Zero emissions are also a key public transport in our region, and we're holding a zero emissions bus forum through October and November online for our members. So people can head to our website for more information on that, and look forward to hearing a bit more about WA's trials as they progress. So I wanted to talk to you now, Rita, about regional Western Australia. And I know we covered a little bit about it, you know, earlier on, but I think it is really important in public transport that often we focus on cities, but cities and regions are really critical to thriving economies and livability for everyone. I understand that in June, the Western Australian government announced a number of upgrades to the regional Trans WA services as well. So what does the future look like in regional Western Australia in terms of public transport?
I think, again, if you look at the southwest Bunbury, I think we'll see improved connections through the Australian train service, and I think we'll see increased usage. We're actually, as part of our rail manufacturing program, we'll be building a new Australian train, two train sets, and they hopefully will be underway in about 2023, the new Australian service. In the meantime, we're again improving station access, station disability access, and also some of the services on board. I think with the longer trips, particularly the Prospector, I think it is about improving the services on board. And so not only the food and the ability to have a greater range of onboard entertainment, Wi-Fi, and they're all the things that I think we'll see is improved services. Across Western Australia, through a combination of TransWA and more air connections, it really is about more accessibility, greater services, and continuing to focus on affordability. They're all very, very important. So I think it's a continued encouragement to grow our services, to make it the preferred way to travel. But with that, you need to continually focus on what the passenger receives on board. And that's something in particular we're focusing on our train services.
Yeah, that's great. And to hear that focus on customer experience, I think is really important, because we can often forget that. But actually the experience that the passengers have, you know, is what keeps them coming back. So yeah, really inspiring and great to hear. I wanted to shift the conversation now, Rita, actually, to talk about your career and to hear a bit more about you and your personal and professional leadership and journey. You've had an incredible career in politics, and you're passionate about achieving great community outcomes. There's no doubt about that in terms of your achievements, you know, while you've been working for the public and the community. And I wanted to ask you, particularly as a female leader, what do you think has been key to your success? And how have you balanced your career and family life during the process?
Okay, well, the first part of how to be successful, I think, is a strong focus on what you're elected to do and achieving those outcomes. I think the one thing about being a minister is there's so many things that you can be interested in. And in particular, my portfolio, to be honest, is one of a lot of activity, so both on the planning front and transport. And I've really had a focus on what were we elected to do and the delivery of those commitments. But you have to have a continued focus. It's not suddenly you can drop in a month, for a month, or for a day even. And so you have to first, second, third, fourth year, continually focus on achieving what you set out to do. You know, you're always going to interrogate. You always got to question yourself. You've got to question the public servants. But it's a continued focus on achieving and doing. Because in politics, like I said, it's very easy to be distracted by other things. And it's also very easy to sit back sometimes and just follow what, in a sense, the bureaucracy is telling you without questioning and making sure that your agenda can be best delivered. So I think a strong focus is probably what's helped me achieve. And I think that's helped in balancing life and in particular work and family. I do have three young children. They're getting into a bit older, but Grace is my oldest, is 10, and I have 8-year-old twins. So it is challenging. There's no doubt about it. You know, every day there's a challenge between getting my three ready for school, doing radio interviews, getting to work, making sure that you're on top of your game. But I think what I've done is really pretty much prioritised my children and my work. And I don't do a lot of social events. I don't get distracted by, I suppose, going to things that I don't need to. And that sounds a bit harsh, but I say no to a lot of events, and I think that's what's kept me going. And people say, do you sleep? I say, well, I do sleep because I say no to a lot of events. Because again, in this job, there are a lot of things you can go to, but I've really prioritised my family time and making sure that I make attending all my kids' sporting events where I can and their priorities. If I keep that, then I think I'm very balanced. But it is hard, there's no doubt, as any, you know, as any working mother would, you know, testify. It is hard, but as I said, I don't do things that aren't achieving an outcome I set out to do. So it's a harsh judgment of appointments, it's a harsh judgment of social events, but very rarely do you see me doing anything which isn't for a purpose to achieve an outcome.
Thanks so much for sharing that and being so honest about a challenge that I think many women face, you know, continually, and whether they're caring for their own kids or for other family or friends. Yeah, really powerful to hear. So thank you. I wanted to ask you, you know, about women in public transport more broadly. And, you know, certainly this podcast is about raising the profile of women and getting the diversity of voices and opinions out there that work in public transport, and also inspiring women, you know, to join the sector. And I wanted to ask, what are some initiatives you're looking at in terms of women from diverse backgrounds being part of the public transport workforce and rising up the ranks into leadership roles?
Yeah, well, we do have some very good women, in particular running our TransPerth network. But we are targeting 50% across the public sector of women in senior executive positions. I'd be honest to say that currently in transport, there's not a lot of women in senior executive positions, but I think that will change. We're also making sure that, you know, from train drivers to customer service officers across the entire network, that are encouraging women to join and work in our public transport network. I think more and more, in particular when it comes to train drivers, you're seeing a greater uptake of women and also as bus drivers, but we're probably nowhere near where we should be in relation to percentages, but we have set ourselves targets. And also, I think in a sense, being a female minister probably encourages more women to be interested in these types of jobs. And the other thing, and this is very important too, that being involved in rail in particular, but also buses, but in a state like WA, the opportunities are enormous, because not only do we run a public transport rail network, but rail in WA, particularly because the mining sector and also the agricultural sector, is a big employer. So I keep saying to my two girls that, you know, if you get a career in rail in particular, and you might start off in the public transport service, but you may also end up in the mining sector, and their skills, whether it's in the engineering, whether it's in signalling, whether it's in customer services, wherever it is, there's a lot of opportunity. So I think we have to keep highlighting the opportunities that the rail industry, but also public transport offer for people. And, you know, I think it's an industry that's going to continue to grow, in particular as our population grows, as in particular as we keep investing in infrastructure.
Public transport has a lot to offer as a career path, and it was great to hear, you know, those options and where it can take you. I wanted to talk a bit more, I guess, about your background. I know that you've got a Bachelor of Business degree, and you worked actually at the Departments of Finance and Treasury in Canberra. So I actually wanted to throw an economic question at you, because there's a lot of conversation at the moment around how public transport is a lever that can be used to drive economic growth, and I think is becoming increasingly important, particularly in this post-COVID context as well. So I know that in Western Australia, there's a big focus on local manufacturing and job growth. What do you see as the opportunities for public transport to support that?
Yeah, so two parts. There's working in public transport, both in a sense creating, you know, trains or building rail lines. So there's that economic impact. And for example, we looked at what Victoria did in relation to local rail manufacturing, and we created a model that was particular to WA, but all about generating a rail car manufacturing back in WA. The other thing about rail car manufacturing is many of the skills that are in this sort of high-tech manufacturing can also go across other industries. So, for example, defence and shipbuilding are areas that we're looking at. The rail car manufacturing program also being a lever to encourage further manufacturing across different sectors. So I think, and again, I think this would be the same across, for example, we're also looking at what the skills we're bringing into railcar manufacturing, and then looking at, for example, what the mining companies are doing with their rail cars or their rolling stock, and seeing whether, again, we can make sure that all their maintenance and hopefully one day their manufacturing can come to WA. So currently, for example, some of their maintenance is done offshore, so away from WA. And so I think the rail car manufacturing industry can create opportunities both across the private sector in rolling stock maintenance and so forth, but also across other industries. The second is more general about public transport and what the wider economic benefit of public transport. And I think this is something we've engaged with Infrastructure Australia on in assessing benefit cost and ratios on public transport projects, is what it can bring in relation to the entire sort of community. So a well-planned station and a well-planned community has significant wider economic benefits. It reduces congestion. It reduces travel time. It reduces the costs of to families of owning vehicles. I always say that if you can structure a suburb and a neighbourhood where the family of four don't need two cars, then you're achieving significant cost savings to that family, and you're actually bringing other benefits to that family as well. There's the environmental benefits as well of public transport versus individual vehicles. Then there's the facilitation of good development. And so what we're looking at is why it's costs less to provide some smart density around a station, whether it comes to water usage, power usage, the amount of clearing you need of land. So there's those benefits. Then there's also the benefits to local communities and small business. And in a number of our new developments and new rail lines, we're actually going past older high streets, older small business areas. And I keep saying that when you build a new station or you revitalise a station, you're supporting small business, because people will be walking past your small business. You're supporting the local business environment. So there are so many different economic arguments when it comes to public transport. They're just a few, but I think one of the things we need to continue to look at is how we widen the economic argument when it comes to our benefit cost ratios. And for example, my view is that if you can save everybody one vehicle, you're saving them probably tens of thousands of dollars each year, potentially, in depreciation, running costs and so forth. So there are significant costs and economic benefits to public transport.
Rita, I love that you spoke about that, because I'm a big believer in that a well-planned public transport project has benefits far beyond getting people where they need to go. And it's often something that I think we miss when we talk about benefit cost ratios in the past. So really great to hear that there's a focus on that. I wanted to ask you, this is one of my last questions, about a project or initiative that you've worked on that you're really proud of. And I'm sure there's more than one, but I thought if you could maybe just outline one for us that, you know, you've been involved with.
Okay. The railcar manufacturing policy I developed in opposition. I visited Melbourne. I talked to industry. I wrote the policy, and I get to implement it. And it's even bigger and better than I wrote. So it's achieving, it's bigger and better than I could have anticipated. So that was a good one. I'll do two. The other, I can't not talk about the Yellowbrook Rail Line. Yeah. The Yellowbrook Rail Line in WA is sort of emblematic of bad policies of the past, but also is now the positivity of the future. It was a commitment gave by another previous government in 2008 that they never implemented. I argued strongly that we needed the Yellowbrook Rail Line. I developed the policy for the Yellowbrook Rail Line, and I argued very strongly that the population of that corridor needed the Yellowbrook Rail Line. So getting to government, basically, it was a bit of a hard task to make sure everyone was on the same page. But when we did the BC, the benefit cost ratio of the economic of the Ellenbrook rail line, it justified all the comments that we'd made in the past and the fact that it had a positive BCR, it was going to provide net economic benefit. And I'm now delivering exactly what I said I was going to deliver. And so when you're in opposition, as people know, you don't have a lot of resources. You really have to do all your own research, understand, you know, a lot of the, in a sense, technical aspects of rail lines. So I sort of taught myself in opposition, and now I'm able to deliver exactly what we said we were. And that's one I'm very, very proud of.
Thanks for sharing, Rita. That's really inspiring to hear, actually, how you've been able to take a policy right from, you know, concept and then delivery. So this is my last question. And I usually ask this question to the inspiring female leaders that we interview. So for our listeners out there who might be early on in their career, whether that's in the public transport or broader mobility space, what advice would you have?
I think a former premier always said, things are never as bad as you think. Things are never as good as you think. So perspective is always important. So we all have hard days at work and we all have tricky situations, but try and keep life and work into perspective. But also focus on what makes you happy. Focus on the work that you enjoy doing. And I think the opportunities will come. Also, as a woman, you're normally battling a few more issues than possibly your male equivalent. So it is very important to remain positive. Don't try and be something that you're not. Be real to yourself, because I find that in particular women, we try and pretend that we're this or we're that or whatever. But you actually just have to be real and be yourself. And I think, like I said, success will come. Take the opportunities, take every opportunity, and focus on what makes you happy in the workplace too. Because ultimately, you know, once you're happy, you'll be able to achieve. But like, my biggest advice would be true to yourself, and don't think you need to dress a certain way or be a certain person to succeed. Because I think if you're genuine, and you like what you're doing and you're good at what you're doing, you'll achieve the results. And I think that's probably the biggest lesson for me.
Thank you, Rita. That is such great advice. And I think everyone would have taken something away from that. I've gone through all my questions. I wanted to ask, is there anything we haven't covered that you'd like to make a comment on before we sign off?
I'll just, you know, invite anyone who's keen to be involved in public transport and what we're doing over in Western Australia, please be involved, because it is a really exciting time for WA. It is transformational. It is, like I said, like the amount of work we're doing, the number of stations we're building, never seen before in Western Australia. So it is a really exciting time, and people can monitor what we're doing on our Metronet websites if they're keen to see the new stations that we're building and the excitement that it's bringing.
Yeah, absolutely. And so looking forward to seeing how the big projects progress and how Metronet plays out as well and the changes that's going to bring. Thanks so much for your time, Rita. It's been so great having you as a guest this week. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
To our listeners, thanks for tuning in to hear from Minister Safiotti in Western Australia. And if you're enjoying our podcast, please share it and leave us a review on your favourite podcast platforms to help other people find us. I'm Michelle Batsis, and I'll speak to you again next week for another episode of Women Who Move Nations.
Thank you to everyone for listening to this week's episode of Women Who Move Nations. This series is co-produced by Cassandra Kadelka and Lara Rudd, with copywriting by Sophia Dickinson. Please join us each week as we raise the voices of women in the public transport and mobility sector. I'm Michelle Batsis. Keep safe and keep our nations moving.